Number three from our Big Sound 11. Nice to be with you today in the Chuck Dan Show.
Vuba, Vuba, Vuba. Noah.
Who is that?
It's the Lord, Noah.
Right.
Listen, we've had a winner already for our secret shopper. Record-breaking time, Mrs. Eileen Erdman was really on the ball and hopped over to Bay Village. She lives at 1484 Westwood in Lakewood.
Music and fun. News and weather. You'll hear it all on WHLO.
Hot dog, here's the dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh James Show, and just got back from the John Birch Society dinner, and I'll tell you more about that later. And of course, I'm nothing if not into conspiracies, and a number of them are real. The bottom line is most people, I think, today laugh long and hard when they hear that one of the three greatest lies are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. But, you know, most people find it very hard to believe that the truth might be, I'm from the government, I'm here to endanger your life without your knowledge or approval, and if you get sick, and you probably will, we'll call you crazy and deny any involvement. And by the way, we'll start with the soldiers. In wartime. Yeah, you'd say, come on, what are you going to tell me next, shape-shifting lizards? I'm pretty sure that the shape-shifting lizard stuff isn't true. Just as sure as I am of that, I am positive that our government has, over the years, put us in harm's way, knowingly and with intention. But what's been going on ever since you first heard the term Gulf War Syndrome, and long before, actually, is totally alarming. Gary Matsumoto is an investigative journalist. Normally, we, quote-unquote, don't do authors. However, in this case, what Gary found in the business of investigating this particular story was so large that he wrote Vaccine A, and you should read it. Gary Matsumoto, welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Hey, thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I'm delighted you wrote the book. As I say, I'm not the least bit surprised given the history of our government, but at the same time, when I look at the scope of what's been going on, it seems more like this is a work of fiction.
Well, that's what the Department of Defense would like you to think.
Yeah, and it's not.
Yeah, they, if you ask them, and they'll tell you that Gary Matsumoto's sources are little green men who landed in Roswell, New Mexico, about 1947.
Yes, and several people who've died and their families who watched them do it, and their military records, which in fact flagrantly, you know, I guess, revealed exactly what your premise was. Other than that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Raleigh, I was listening to you introduce this segment, and, you know, you're exactly right. I think none of us really wants to believe that, at least in this day and age, our government is capable of doing such a thing, least of all to our own troops in combat.
Yeah, that's the amazing PS. And, you know, I think the reason that people don't want to believe it, other than it's so beyond anything a moral person would conceive, is that if we believe this, we have to, in fact, get involved, be responsible, take a stance, and upset our daily life to make sure that this doesn't continue. So it's easier to say, oh, no, Gary's crazy.
Yeah, it's easier to say that. And unfortunately, what I'm talking about is not such a crazy thing. And in fact, if you examine the declassified documents from the Department of Defense, just from the Gulf War alone, but there are a number of documents pointing to this sort of activity prior to the Gulf War. In fact, immediately prior to the Gulf War, they were running an experiment with a different vaccine, hepatitis A, on troops and with the 101st Airborne at Fort Campbell in Kentucky, with the 25th Infantry Division at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii, and at Fort Lewis in Tacoma, Washington. This is not a strange, crazy sort of allegation. Unfortunately, what we're talking about is business as usual.
Yeah, systematic. And, you know, on the one hand, we would say, my God, on our troops, the very people designed to defend us, what could be crazier? And the other hand is crazy like a fox, because no one, as an American, other than someone in the military, can be in a situation where refusing an order would mean a court-martial.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. What you have here is the perfect population of people on which to conduct experiments.
Right, young and healthy.
Right, young and healthy. You can control their movements. If you are a civilian volunteering for a study run by a university, you can pick up and quit whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you move away. You move to a different town.
Sure.
They can't do anything about it. Disrupts their data points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the military, you go wherever they tell you to go.
Yes, and do what they tell you to do and are monitored however they tell you to be monitored, and they don't have to answer why.
Exactly.
Now, with that in mind, of course...
Oh, you know, there's one other point that's very important,
yeah.
Raleigh. You can't sue for damages.
Oh, of course not. That's right. You know, the government is absolved from everything from Y2K to your death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like nothing else, which is truly alarming. So here you have the perfect populace with no recourse. It's bad enough that they're doing this, and we'll get into what they've been doing. But to me, even a greater damage is, in fact, calling individuals who have come down with symptoms crazy.
Yes. You know, that, to me, was one of the most upsetting things I learned as I got deeper and deeper into this. It's systematic. They have told all of these men and women with real physical ailments that it is all in their heads. They send them off to the psychiatrist. They get a psychiatric diagnosis for physical ailments like multiple sclerosis and lupus.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're doing is first they injure them, then they insult them.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And this is just so beyond what anyone can comprehend, which is why I wanted you on. Firstly, hopefully people will go out and get vaccine A, because they do need to read it. But to run this down, of course, we had an anthrax vaccine for years that was perfectly fine until we found out it didn't work, right?
Yeah. You know, in fact, you know, the really troubling thing about this, Raleigh, is that the Army's top scientists, we're not talking about low-level bench jockeys here. We're talking about the very creme de la creme at Fort Detrick,
mm-hmm.
who were working with anthrax in the early 60s,
mm-hmm.
before the vaccine was ever licensed. They mm-hmm. said, this thing isn't going to work. They had cultured a strain that killed people at a New Hampshire goat hair processing mill in the late 1950s.
Oh, no, it killed people?
Oh, yeah. So this strain that killed people there, they had, they call the term they use challenge. They challenged guinea pigs that had been injected with the Army's anthrax vaccine,
mm-hmm.
and they died.
Mm.
The vaccine did not protect them from this strain that killed people.
Right.
Now, this vaccine was supposed to protect people.
Right.
So what does that tell you?
Well, at best, it's ineffective.
Yeah.
At worst, it alone will kill you.
Yeah. Now, they knew this in the early 1960s, and these Army scientists said, well, we need a new vaccine. This design will not work.
Mm-hmm.
But the Army wasn't paying attention because we were already in Vietnam.
Right. And, of course, only our government, maybe every government, but only a government is willing to legislate technology and science.
Yeah.
So so they legislated this vaccine to be effective, and, of course, it failed miserably.
Yes. And they weren't. Again, they just let it slide because we're mired in Vietnam and we're still thinking in terms of when it comes to strategic conflict with the Soviet Union, we're thinking nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
So biological warfare, even though we were still making biological weapons and anthrax weapons at the time, we thought it was just going to be an afterthought, that our troops probably would not encounter this in the field until something happened in 1979.
In Russia, right?
In Russia. Mm-hmm. The Russians, they had an outbreak. Suddenly, 66 people die of anthrax mysteriously deep in the Soviet Union in the Ural Mountains. We're talking about 1,000 miles east of Moscow.
Right. Of course, this makes front page nowhere.
Right. But the import of this was clear to all the analysts in British and U.S. intelligence. They said, well, you know what? We all signed this treaty. We obeyed the treaty. We destroyed our biological warfare stocks. Russia did not.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we're caught with our pants around our ankles. We need a new vaccine. We've got no defense against this stuff.
Right, and now this is the fascinating part, because, of course, a lot of people say, well, they've got it for cattle, but, of course, the difference is, if a few of the cows die, it's not a big deal.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And that's right. You know, the most effective vaccines have always been those that contain the whole bug.
Right.
Either dead or weakened.
Right.
And they were just too afraid of creating an anthrax vaccine with live anthrax spores.
Yeah, or we killed people.
They're afraid of killing people.
Right. So instead, we're going to do it systematically. Gary Matsumoto is my guest. The book is Vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. You need to read it. We'll tell you. I bet you can get it online, too, and we'll tell you about that, too. But in the meantime, I assure you that every word of this is true. Every bit of this is going on. And anybody who knows anybody who has come down with a nebulous Gulf War syndrome, you're about to find out why.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
If I mention gold, what do you think? Well, these days, most people say high prices, not a good time to buy. But in truth, it's as good a time as any, particularly if you don't own any gold, because gold is the original investment. It'll never be worthless. The entire country can fall apart. The currency can go to hell. Gold will have value. But there is a catch to this. If you don't understand how gold is traded, you may wind up not getting a lot of gold for your money. For one thing, products have a commission rate. It can be as high as 80%. Products have a premium, most of them, and sometimes that's warranted. Other times, maybe not so. And products also have common value. Well, some do. If you buy a coin and there's not a common value, when you go to sell it, what you get is melt value. So you can wind up with not a lot of gold for your money or not a lot of money for your gold. What should you do? I think you should check out Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company. Melody and her staff have been doing this for over a dozen years. They've traded in everything, but they're not middlemen or brokers. They're not pushing any product. They have the integrity to tell you the truth and the knowledge to be able to do it. You can go online right now, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Read the frequently asked questions. Read Melody's notes and the newsletters, and you'll get a handle. And then at that point, well, you may want to give them a call. They'll be happy to answer your questions, and there's never any pressure to invest. That's 1-800-375-4188, 1-800-375-4188. When you're ready to buy, oh, I know you'll come back to Discount Gold and Silver. Nobody beats their commission rate, fastest shipping in the industry, never a minimum order, but above all, one-on-one customer service. Everything's still done by hand. Check it out. Gold can be terrific or disappointing, and the difference is, did you know what you were buying? Find out. DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. You tell them Raleigh sent you.
I'm walking down the street. Hey, got my pistol in my hand. Yes, I'm walking down the street. Hey, got my pistol in my hand. All the girls pop around, Mr. Bane.
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show.
Girl, show me what you got. Hey, shake it once or twice.
Yeah, Mr. Bang Bang Man on the Raleigh James Show. Gary Matsumoto has written a book you need to read. And I don't make you read much, but this is something I want you to read. Vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. So that is your homework. Now, Gary, is that available online?
Yep. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can even buy it from my publisher, Basic Books, in New York City.
Excellent. All right, and of course, all the local bookstores have it, and it's hardback, and it's not pricey and worth every bit of it. Now, that said, so here we are. We're in 1979. We've discovered that the Russians, gee shucky darns, did not get rid of that anthrax. We've discovered that anything we have to combat it, gee shucky darn, doesn't work. We're not going to use the stuff we use on cattle because they die, and then what?
Well, then the Army says, well, let's do more studies.
Yeah, boy.
Sounds familiar, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to laugh.
Oh, I know, because people are dying, but at the same time, if you don't keep a sense of humor, we're going to be crying.
Yeah. What they did was they did more research that basically proved what they already knew, that they had a number of different strains of anthrax that killed guinea pigs that were immunized with the licensed vaccine, the one that was licensed for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Fort Detrick did these studies in conjunction with their British counterparts at Porton Down in England.
Mm-hmm.
So on both sides of the Atlantic, they got the same results.
Lots of dead guinea pigs.
Dead guinea pigs.
Yeah.
And interestingly, one of the strains, the one that was the absolute hottest, the one that just wiped them all out, was the Ames strain that got mailed around to the Senate and to
the
our anchormen here in New York.
Right, and the National Enquirer, that poor photographer who died.
Yes. Yeah, they knew that from the minute they got their hands on that strain around 1980, they knew it was one of the hottest things that ever got in their door, past their doors.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted a vaccine. This became the new standard.
Right.
If you can protect an animal from this strain, you got a vaccine that they think will work.
Right.
So they were all trying to protect against the Ames strain, and the other problem that the Army had was this: you know, the licensed vaccine was so weak that it required a basic series of six shots. Count them, six.
Mm-hmm.
And then even after you had six, you still had to get one every year after that.
And hope.
To maintain immunity, and then say your prayers.
Right. Exactly. But bottom line is, they needed an accelerant.
Yes. Yeah, you know, they had a weak vaccine, and the new one was pretty much designed along the same lines as the old one. It was just a better, improved way of making the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed this accelerant. They needed a way to boost the immune system so they get a more aggressive response to what they were injecting.
Right, and of course, by doing that, they don't put any more live virus or dead virus even in you. They create something in your body that reacts to it with a more stringent immune reaction.
Yeah.
Now, even saying that, and I'm a person with autoimmune disorder, even saying that, we can see this is the road to hell.
Yeah. Well, you know, I having used that phrase, they had good intentions.
Absolutely. The only part where you and I totally agree is that it turned bad when they denied, number one, and it turned real bad without informed consent.
Yeah. Yes. And that, you know, you're just in terms of just wrapping up the scientific issue here, and we don't want to dwell on this too much and make people's eyes glaze over, but they wanted to stick with this idea of creating a vaccine that did not contain the germ.
Right.
And what was unique about this anthrax vaccine, both the old and the new one, it doesn't even contain a piece of the germ.
So the only way it can possibly work is to trick the immune system into thinking it's the germ.
That's what they were hoping. What they did was they just took a protein that the anthrax secretes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a piece of the organism itself. So there's nothing in this vaccine, old or new, to actually promote an immune response that'll clear the germ from your body should you, you know, God forbid, ever be infected with it.
Right. If you come into contact, this is useless in its present form. So now they've got to come up with something that will make your body think that this is the real deal, and then pray, of course, that it'll work in real-world cases, and also pray, of course, that it won't kill you before that.
Yeah. So they had a bad idea, and they made it worse.
Right. Right. And
trying to salvage a bad idea.
Yeah, and that's a perfect way to put it, and that's really all the science anybody needs to know about this. You're looking for a vaccine. You can't use the real stuff. You're going to use something else, and in order to make it work, you got to trick the human body into thinking it's the real stuff, and that's where the accelerant comes in, and that's where the trouble starts.
Yeah. Now, this accelerant is a problem because for the very reason, and this is the terrible irony in all this, there are lots of ironies here. One was that they really wanted to save lives, mm-hmm. not take them, and they wound up doing the latter.
Yes.
The other irony is that they thought this stuff was safe precisely because it's our own bodies make it.
You know, isn't that true? And we hear that every day about everything from aspartame on down. Our bodies make it. It must be fine.
Yes.
Exactly. Gary Matsumoto is our guest. The book is Vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. So now you know what the government's up against. With the best intentions of the world, they are going to need to be able to inoculate us against anthrax in case the Ruskies or somebody comes to use it. All right, so you can't use the real stuff because too much of the cattle dies. And the fake stuff won't work, so you're going to need some form of an accelerant so that your body will think that this is the real deal. Now, you see, this is one of these things that works so well on paper. All right, well, we'll introduce you to squalene and a bunch of other things coming up, and then you will hear the entire deception. All right, so now you know what they're trying to do. Wait until you hear what they did. Coming up on The Rolly James Show.
The Rolly James Show. To the max. The Rolly James Show.
You're gonna give up your heart. Do the best that you can. If he can walk the walk, can he talk the talk? Give it to a good man. Please, baby.
Ricky Godfrey, who we had on Friday night. That's just great. Good soul music. Give it to a good man. Beach music at its finest. All right. The government at its worst. Let's get back. Yeah. There's a segue from hell. Gary Matsumoto, and Vaccine A. This is absolutely the truth. Oh, yeah, the government will say we're all crazy, but you need to hear the rest of the story. Okay, so we left the government with their great intentions and a wonderful plan. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. One of their biggest problems as military strategists was the six-shot series. It had to be administered at specific intervals,
mm-hmm.
or you had to start over from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your first four shots, after your first one, 2 weeks later, then 2 weeks after that, and then 5 months after that.
Right, and therefore, if you're talking about the troops and they're in the jungles of God knows where, you can't exactly get them and say, line up.
You can't do that.
Right.
Or, as it turned out in Desert Shield and Desert Storm,
right,
when you're vaccinating like 15,000 troops at a crack,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't put them out in on the battlefield and say, whoop, Saddam, can you just wait a minute here.
Right.
It's time for the two-week booster.
Right. Hang on a minute, Fallujah. We'll be right back to you after this shot.
Yeah, and so the combat guys are going over to the medical command guys and saying, hey, this doesn't work for us.
Right.
We need a shot. We need an anthrax vaccine that works faster, and we need it to work with one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Make it happen.
Right.
And in 1989, Fort Detrick said, we made it happen.
10 years later.
Yeah.
Fascinating timing, of course, because this is just before the Gulf War.
Just before the Gulf War.
Right, and now we...
Ready for clinical trials.
Yeah, and guess who's going to get them?
Guess who's going to get them, and guess what it contains? It contains this accelerant.
Right.
Now, the problem you had, that military personnel face in this situation is this. This sort of experimentation is not merely legal and done on a fairly, how would I best put it, not infrequently by the Department of Defense. It is sanctioned by the U.S. public health establishment.
Yeah, frighteningly, and we see that all the time, like whether they've infused a tunnel with a virus to see how many people get sick in 1958 in Pennsylvania, or if we bring people down with VD and don't cure them in Tuskegee, or we got a long history of this.
Yeah. Now, the very first time, this was not the first time that they tested a vaccine accelerant on troops. First time they did it was in 1951 at Fort Dix in New Jersey.
And was it also squalene?
No, but it was a similar thing. It was an oil. And this oil didn't work, so they're looking for a new oil, you see.
Yeah.
They wanted an oil change.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Now, what they did, and this is another thing that tells you why they want to experiment on troops, they had 44,000 troops in that trial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine SmithKline Beecham. Pfizer.
I know. Imagine what they'd have to pay, number one. And like you say, when they decided to leave Greater Philadelphia.
They could never do that.
No.
They, as deep a pockets as these big corporations have, they could never run a trial that involves nearly 50,000 subjects.
Nor could they make themselves fully immune from suit based upon the way the government's
exactly.
doing it.
Unless, as they now do, they form strategic partnerships with the Department of Defense.
Right.
Which indemnifies them from lawsuit.
Exactly.
So they're now, pun intended, immune from legal action.
Well, yes, and wasn't that part of the original Patriot Act that they were trying to make everybody immune from the action?
And I don't want to jump too far ahead here for your story here, Raleigh, but, President Bush has bought 75 million doses of this new vaccine. I'm saying they've been testing on troops and getting them sick.
Mm-hmm.
He bought 75 million doses for all of us civilians.
Yeah.
This is going to be the new strategic stockpile.
Right, and the really frightening part is we already have governors all over the country who have said they'll use civil forfeiture to take away your property if you don't stand in line.
Yeah.
So, we are getting ahead of ourselves. But for anybody who thinks, I don't care, I'm not enlisting in the military, just you wait.
Yeah.
All right, so
now, getting back to Fort Dix.
Yes.
You'll never guess who ran that trial.
Uh-oh.
Dr. Jonas Salk.
Yeah, I believe that.
The man who gave us polio vaccine.
Right, absolutely. Because his intentions were good.
Yeah. And what a lot of people probably of a much younger vintage will not remember is that some of the lots of the original polio vaccine caused more cases of polio than they
prevented. Yes, that's right. Right. And school kids standing up in line.
Yes, and that's why we have a National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act as in response to the problems with this polio vaccine. But in any case, the military has been trying, along with its partners at the Department of Health and Human Services, to come up with an oil additive for vaccines for nearly half a century.
Right, and the good news, of course, is an oil additive will be a wonderful accelerant, like lighter fluid. The bad news is that the body and oil additives do not necessarily get along.
Yeah, well, the problem is, we were talking before the break about how it's a problem that this stuff, ironically, this stuff is in your own body. The excuse they were making for why they thought it was safe. They never really tested it. They didn't test this hypothesis.
Right.
They just assumed it.
Right.
And what happened was this. They thought because it's in the body, the immune system would react to it. The problem is the immune system did.
Dramatically.
And once you trigger this response against this specific molecule, the immune system will start to attack it like Pac-Man, relentlessly.
Right, and even in the absence of the molecule, that's what autoimmune is about. The body will continue to attack itself as if it was there.
Yes. And the problem with this particular molecule, this oil, squalene, it's in the brain. It's in all throughout your nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And once your immune system, starts going after it, it will attack indiscriminately. and it leads to these autoimmune diseases like MS and lupus.
Right, right, and in some cases, absolute death.
Yes, and, you know, the problem with autoimmunity is once you get it, it doesn't go away.
Tell me.
The best you can do is manage it.
That's right, and managing it is not good because all we know how to do is kind of dampen our immune response through things like steroids, which have their own list of side effects.
Yeah.
So it's not even something that keeps it at bay safely.
Right.
You're then on the roller coaster of managing something that can potentially be life-threatening with something that can potentially be life-threatening.
Yeah.
Now, for people who come down with that naturally, gee, that's a shame. But for the government to take throngs of healthy young people and knowingly, not in their first trial necessarily, knowingly subject them to this is just amazing. So at this point, we'll just assume on the side of the optimism that they didn't realize this.
Yeah, well, they thought it was safe. The National Institutes of Health told Army scientists this was safe.
And so here they go. So in 89, they start inoculating.
What they did was they went to an international workshop on anthrax in England. And they made this big announcement. We've got the one-shot vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
They got everyone's attention. Now they got to find a way to test it. Well, you know, if you go the normal process, you sort of like go up in the evolutionary ladder, you know, starting with mice, you know, guinea pigs, rabbits, monkeys, and then finally human beings.
Well, we don't have time for that.
We don't have time for it. And they really didn't have time when Saddam invaded Kuwait.
Right. So now, exactly, which was probably a little bigger than they thought it was going to be initially.
Yeah. They were confronted with an enemy for the first time that had not only had a big conventional army, but it had this weapon. It had anthrax. And I was just speaking to one of the army colonels in charge of biomedical defense for Desert Storm. And, you know, he said just the other day, and he was just saying, you know, Gary, that was our number one fear.
Right, because we weren't sure exactly what they had. We just knew that they had, because in some cases we helped get it to them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We sold, another irony. In 19, just about the same time period, 88, 89, we sold Iraq 7 or 8 strains of anthrax, including the old United States weapons strain. Real smart.
Right. So now we know they have it. Plus, we know that he'd been kind of canoodling with the Russians, so we're not 100% sure what he's got there, too. We just know we're in trouble. So, you know, skip the monkeys. Here comes the troops.
Yeah. Now, when I was a correspondent with NBC Nightly News, in Saudi Arabia at the time during Desert Shield.
You didn't get this vaccine, did you?
No.
Oh, thank God.
No. In fact, they didn't have enough.
Oh, thank God.
Yes, thank goodness. I was at what they call an air transportable hospital, and these are like hospitals that are essentially hot air balloons.
Mm-hmm.
They blow them up,
mm-hmm.
and then it's like a big hot air balloon tent.
Mm-hmm.
Inflate it, and then they put all their medical gear in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interviewing the doctors, some of the doctors and nurses there, and they told me that they had, at what they thought at the time, this is the figure that they used, between 80 and 100,000 body bags in country.
Mm.
And they said, they're very frank about this. They said, no, we're not worried about conventional warfare. We don't care about Saddam's tanks, his planes. We'll wipe them off the desert.
Right.
In short order. What they were scared of was nerve agent and anthrax.
Right.
And anthrax even worse because they knew they didn't have a vaccine that worked. They had no protection.
So right there we have all the justification for why we need to try this on the troops. And, you know, if they were forthcoming and honest and everything that was above board, I think most people would understand the equation and be fine with it.
Yeah. Oh, and, you know, there's one more piece of the puzzle, Raleigh. 1974, right after the exposés of the Tuskegee experiment, and there was a Willowbrook experiment in New York where the former president of the American Pediatric Association was injecting mentally handicapped kids at the Willowbrook School in Staten Island with hepatitis B virus.
Yes.
Just to watch the course of the disease.
Yes.
Big furor in the country. This stuff, these human experiments, are getting shut down from coast to coast. One place it didn't get shut down. The military.
The military, of course not.
In fact, the U.S. Public Health Establishment ensured this. They wrote a memorandum of understanding that expressly permits the Department of Defense to run classified clinical trials with investigational new drugs on troops without informed consent, provided there is a compelling national security reason to do so.
Right.
But it doesn't define how you define national security reasons.
Oh, it never does, and nor is this even in the fine print that the average enlistee has read.
Yep. Now, anthrax in Iraq, you would say that probably constitutes a pretty good national security reason, right?
Yeah.
I think so, too. To be fair to these guys, I think so, too. And if you have on one end of the scale 100,000 body bags, and I didn't see the body bags, but I did see the aluminum coffins stacked on the runways.
Mm-hmm.
On the side of the runways, they were stacked higher than me.
Yeah, I would agree that we can add into evidence that they absolutely had reason to suspect this and justification to test this.
Yes. And if you had a new vaccine, just hot off the lab bench, the latest and greatest, you thought it was better than the old one, it worked faster, worked with one shot, and you thought it was safe, what would you choose?
Well, that's right. So far, about the only thing we can say is we're a little upset about informed consent, but after all, that's the law.
Yeah, but I've got to tell you something. You know what's strange about it, Raleigh, is this. They were supposedly giving troops a licensed vaccine. They were supposed to be giving them the licensed anthrax vaccine. That's what they were telling our men and women over there during the first Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
But then they made it a secret immunization. It was the only classified immunization during the whole war. There were other investigational new drugs out there. One of them was Botox.
Right, right.
And they administered some 8,000 doses, or 8,000 doses to 8,000 troops, this investigational new drug, but they told them about it.
Right.
And it wasn't a secret. Even people back home knew this was happening.
Right.
Anthrax, big secret.
Right.
They made everyone sign a sheet of paper saying they wouldn't say anything about it. It wasn't entered into their shot records. Troops had to sign special rosters, and that went back to the Army Surgeon General's office. Nobody ever saw those rosters again for years. And doctors in the field were told, burn the boxes. They were taking these anthrax boxes in which these doses were packaged, and they were throwing them in these big 55-gallon steel drums behind the shot tents and burning them up. No evidence.
Okay, so what this tells you right here is we now have a departure from what we would normally say is, okay, we've come up with our best shot, we're going to give people these vaccine, and hopefully it'll work. Now we know there's a little more experimenting going on than anybody's willing to cop to.
Yeah, you have to ask yourself, if you were so certain this was better and it was safe, why don't you just tell these people?
Yes, right. And even if you had a scintilla of doubt, why would this be classified when your rationale was, hey, it's either this or come down with anthrax for sure and die?
Mm.
So most people, facing that, would understand why this is mandatory. But as soon as you have the kind of secrecy where you're burning things and throwing things away and not entering things into record and entering them into shorthand, which we'll get to and all that, a lot more is going on than they're willing to admit to the public.
That's what it looked like to me.
Absolutely. Gary Matsumoto is our guest. Vaccine A is the book, The Covert Government Experiment That's Killing Our Soldiers, Amazon.com. Everywhere else, it is published by Basic Books, and you need to read this, particularly if you're still standing around thinking that maybe at times I'm from the government and I am here to help you is what will be knocking at your door.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
If you're a commercial driver, I've got a question for you. What's the single easiest way to improve your life on the road? Now, you know, I bet there's as many answers to that as there are drivers on the road, but the right answer is, join OWIDA. And already you're thinking, and that's going to change my life? Well, you know, if enough drivers join, the answer to that actually is yes. OWIDA is the one group that lobbies for your interests, that talks to the DOT about regulation, lobbies Congress about legislation, and the reality is, you know, they're not the only group out there. Oh, they're the only group out there representing your interests. But in terms of the whole driving paradigm in the transportation industry, there are a lot of groups that could care less about the driver that are lobbying hard. And some of them have a lot of members, and some of them have a lot of clout. And the only way to equal the playing field is by getting OWIDA the kind of membership base that cannot be ignored. How simple is that? $25 for your first year dues if you say you heard it on the Raleigh James Show. There's no downside to this. Please join OWIDA. You can do it by phone at 800-444-5791. That's 800-444-5791. Or you can do it online, OOIDA.com. That's OOIDA.com. However you do it, please join OWIDA. It benefits you and everybody else on the road. Thank you.
I swear I can't get enough.
It is the Raleigh James Show, and we're talking to Gary Matsumoto. Vaccine A is the book, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. And I know already that we will not even get to the meat of this hour. So I will ask Gary if you will hang on with us after the news and tell us more.
I will be glad to.
Excellent. So now, for the last few minutes of this hour, here we are now on top of what we considered to be almost a noble experiment under the circumstance. We have secret classified documents, people told to destroy evidence.
And you know what? If you read the classified documents from the Gulf War, it's actually a little bit worse than that, Raleigh. 1 month after Saddam invaded Kuwait, there is an agency of government, specifically the Department of Defense, that has been associated with human experiments on troops for the last half century. It's called the Armed Forces Epidemiological Board. Mm-hmm. 1 month after Saddam invades Kuwait, AFEB is already sending out invitations to Army and Navy doctors to submit their research proposals because AFEB thinks Desert Shield is going to present unique research opportunities.
Uh-huh.
And when you read some of these research proposals, it's a little hair-raising. They were going to plan a series of vaccine trials on troops in combat,
mm-hmm,
for like several different vaccines, several different experimental medicines. In one case, they were going to give troops infected with a disease that is found in that region, not fatal, but a pretty grotty, mm-hmm, disease. They were just going to give them a vitamin placebo. That's because another group of troops were going to get the experimental medicines, and they wanted to know how well that medicine worked.
Oh, sure. So, you know, at this point, screw the monkeys, screw the guinea pigs. We got the troops.
Yeah. So let's leave. Okay, we're sorry that you got this disease, but, you know, for the greater good, we're only going to give you a vitamin.
Well, right. And now,
except we're not going to tell you that either.
And now we're not talking about the imminent threat of anthrax either.
No.
We're now talking like you say, that the papers say a one-of-a-kind unique opportunity.
Yeah. They were going to use Desert Storm as one big lab.
Oh, man. Well, apparently they did. Gary Matsumoto is our guest. Vaccine A is the book, and there is more coming. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
The Raleigh James Show.
We love to hear the voice of our own Herb Jepko. We're the nightcaps, nighty nightcaps, and our hearts are light and gay.
We fight a spittoon on song. We can't be beat, so grab your seat on Wanko Pen.
I hold in my hand, dear, three letters. Three letters from the stage of your fine, fine, super fine career.
We'll be with you from now until 5:30 this morning, with your kind permission, here on this side of the day.
And you do know who it is. It's the Gator with the heater, heater being all the record. I played a single, a button, cheap and
fast. We hope the day has gone well for you yesterday. And now that a new one is about to start, we hope that it holds much in store.
Did I tell you about the place called Doodiddy? It ain't no town and it ain't no city. It's just awful small, but awful pretty. Will Doodiddy.
Hot dog, here's the dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh James Show in progress. Philadelphia joins us live this hour on the Big Talker 1210. Oh, man, do we have a story for you. I've been talking with Gary Matsumoto, and I continue to. Vaccine A is the book. You need to pick it up. That's right, there's homework. The covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. You can do it at Amazon or pretty much anywhere else, including basic books or, of course, the old-fashioned walk into your local bookstore and get a copy. Now, let me see if I can in a few seconds give you the cliff notes if you're just joining us. We knew the old anthrax vaccine didn't work, but we found that out really firsthand. And when we discovered that Russia had a bunch of this stuff of the most deadly strain, and that was back in 79. Since then, of course, trying to find something that would work was complicated for a number of reasons. But it was finally decided that the deal was anthrax was too dangerous to deal with live in full potency, so the best thing to do was to use a protein molecule from it and an accelerant. The accelerant in case would be an oil accelerant, squalene. Now, with what happened at the beginning of Gulf War and what we knew Saddam to have by virtue of what we sold him, if nothing else, the idea that a vaccine, albeit risky, would be necessary, and the reason for squalene was so it could be injected in one shot rather than six, was something that a lot of people were willing to say, all right, forego the monkeys and guinea pigs, we're going to go with the troops on this. Now, at that point, to give the government its due, they probably thought that this was a pretty good bet and certainly a worthy trade-off. The troops thought, to the extent that they thought at all, they were getting licensed vaccine. Now, this is when all hell breaks loose. And by the way, if you've ever wondered what Gulf War syndrome was, you're about to find out. Gary Matsumoto is a journalist of long standing who stumbled upon this in his research, and the results of which were really so frightening. Vaccine A is the result, and you should read it. So now here we are. We're facing Saddam in the directly. We know we've got to inoculate the troops, but suddenly we're doing this under a horrible shroud of secrecy.
Yes. Again, everyone's lined up often at night. The records of the vaccination not entered into the troops. They have these little yellow WHO shot cards where they record all their immunizations. Nurses, medics wouldn't do it, won't put it in there. They have to sign a special roster that they don't keep. So they have no records of their own that they got this shot. Then they go into the tent, they get the shot, head out the back. If they need, if something happens, they get to lie down on a cot. The doctors, the medics, the nurses, they gather up all the boxes in which these vials were packaged, throw them into this big 55-gallon drum, burn them up. No evidence. Now, why is that? It's supposed to be a licensed vaccine.
Right.
Why? Now, here's the official reason. Official reason is they said, we want to keep the fact that we're vaccinating troops against anthrax a secret, because if Saddam found out, he could switch the biological agent in his warhead from anthrax to something else, like plague.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want him to know. On the other hand, there was another toxin they were very worried about. Botulinum toxin is supposed to be, I realize people go and get their Botox treatments to smooth the wrinkles in their foreheads or something like that.
But, yeah, but in a different form, it's deadly.
It's supposed to be, you know, pound for pound, ounce for ounce, one of the deadliest toxins in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And here is something for which we have an experimental vaccine. But this or toxoid, but we're giving this out in the open. No secrets.
Well, not only that, the argument that we don't want Saddam's people to know falls apart with regard to notating people's confidential medical records in the service. Mm. Because if we believe that Saddam's folks are reading our enlistees' medical records, we got bigger problems than we're stating.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point. Yes.
You know, so on the surface of it, this doesn't line up that you, and especially when you're talking about a licensed experimental vaccine, you would want those records of exactly what you gave to every enlistee to track what happened to them.
Yeah, and in fact, they did have those records. They kept these rosters. But the story after the war that was circulating, you know, even 10 years after the war, was that all these records were missing.
Mm-hmm.
There was no record of what anyone got in the war. When, in fact, all these rosters were shipped back to, initially to Forces Command in Georgia, and then to the Army Surgeon General's office in Falls Church, Virginia.
So
they've had these records for years, and in fact, they used them to do retrospective studies on what happened to these troops who got injected with anthrax vaccine.
Yes, these same troops who we were considered to be mentally disabled because they were suffering from unknown non-physical disorders.
Yep.
Now, one of the interesting things, as you point out in vaccine A, is that not only was this a trial, but it was roulette. Not everybody got the same exact dosage.
Yeah, and that's... you know, in a trial, it's you have to have some people getting the licensed vaccine, the one that they want to get rid of,
mm-hmm.
but they know it's safe. And then another group, a control group, is going to get some sort of placebo, and that could be something like a vitamin,
right,
or saline, something that supposedly is going to be completely non-reactive when you shoot it into somebody's veins,
mm-hmm.
and then someone's going to get the new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the Army had 5 different prototypes of the new stuff, all of which contained squalene.
Right, but different amounts.
Different amounts, and also they were making this anthrax protein, the one that is still the chief pharmaceutical ingredient of the new vaccine.
Mm.
They were just making it in different ways.
Right.
And they said 5 different techniques for making it. And all these prototypes were ready for clinical trials at the time of Desert Shield and Desert Storm.
Right. And, of course, the big shortcoming here is none of the troops were informed that there was a trial.
No, they were not told. They don't know.
To this day.
To this day. And what I'm finding shocking, Raleigh, is that, you know, these documents, and I didn't have these leaked to me. Okay, this wasn't like our friend Dan Rather. Okay, where I got some secret source and it's a photocopy. Some of these documents, and get a load of this, are on the Department of Defense website.
Oh, man.
You have to know where to look.
Right, but it's there.
Oh, it's there. And they declassified a lot of these documents, nearly 100,000. And it's very painstaking work to go on to some of these websites and click and just read each one by one, and it takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that you can find there, again, curled my hair.
When you know what you're looking for, of course. And so here we have folks in harm's way, and suddenly people start coming back sick.
Mm. Yes, and the very first troops reporting sick, I think, were in Indiana and in Alabama. And it was in clusters. It was whole units were reporting ill.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you something right there. You know, something to which they were exposed to as a group.
Right.
And they were reporting, the symptoms were all the same. Joint muscle pain. Very severe joint muscle pain.
Oh, sure. Debilitating.
Yeah. Fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're talking about in many cases, fairly young people, and even if they were older, they're in pretty good shape when they went out there.
Well, and we're also talking a lot of males, and a lot of the symptoms that they're having are the kind of autoimmune disease that would predominantly fall to a woman.
Yes. Autoimmune diseases, like lupus, mm-hmm. are gender-specific. They tend to be, at least.
Right.
The rate is something like 10 to 1, women to men developing this disease.
Mm-hmm.
And the strange thing is a lot of male soldiers coming back from the war were developing lupus. Although, you know,
the government wasn't
copying
to that either.
Yeah, they weren't copying to that. In fact, they didn't even want to run the test for this.
Right.
You know, I looked at the case of one Army colonel, a Green Beret, tough guy, black belt in karate, an NCAA wrestler, Division I wrestler and a champion, was a real macho guy in his 50s, and liked the fact that he could work people into the ground in, you know, out in the morning PT exercises.
Mm-hmm.
This guy comes back. He's over there in Kuwait, gets one shot. His hands start shaking, quivering. Mm-hmm. Can't stop him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't even hold peas on a fork. He can't keep the peas on his fork.
Right.
Gets another shot, nearly blacks out. They send him home. He doesn't want to go home. This is a guy, he's punching his ticket. He wants to make general. He does not want to go home.
Right.
He has to go home. He gets home. He's having these strange blackouts. And what's strange about them is we're not talking about somebody collapsing and unconscious on the floor.
Oh, it's the zombie blackouts where he can be somewhere and be functioning but not have any mental cognition of it.
Yes. And I was not aware that such a thing existed.
Oh, yeah. You can drive to another state and not know how you got there.
Yeah. Well, this is what happened to him. And the healthy warrior syndrome.
Yes.
All these soldiers, they don't want to admit they're sick or anything's
right.
getting to them.
Right.
Just the opposite. They're being accused. They're coming home. They're being told, hey, you know, they're being told they're gold bricks.
Right. They're malingerers.
Or malingerers or wimps. They just the opposite. These are people who do not want to admit they're sick
right.
when they're terribly ill.
Right.
So here's one night this guy is driving home, and he has one of these strange gray outs
mm-hmm.
where he's not aware of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you do this and not wrap your car around a tree.
No, absolutely. And anybody who's a distance driver does this to an extent. It's like you're still driving, but you're detached, and you wake up all of a sudden. You say, my God, how did I get to Bowling Green?
Well, he snaps out of this, and he doesn't know where he is.
Yeah.
He's somewhere, you know, he's living in Maryland, outside the Beltway in Washington.
Uh-huh.
But he has no idea where he's just stopped his car. And he has to call home, call his wife, and this lifelong Marine, Green Beret tough guy,
mm-hmm.
who graduates number one in his airborne class during the Vietnam era. He starts to cry. This man's crying on the phone with his wife.
Yeah, out of utter fear and frustration.
He can't find his way home.
Right.
And from there it got worse, and he went to a number of Army clinics that told him that he had somatoform disorder, which is another way of saying it's all psychosomatic. It's in your
right.
head. You're imagining this.
Right.
It wasn't until he went to see civilian doctors that he discovered he had lupus,
mm-hmm.
which is a rarity among men. And it just so happens that the immunologists and the rheumatologists that he saw, who finally diagnosed him years after there were clinical indications and actual laboratory tests administered to him as early as 1992 that he had lupus. But, the Army wasn't having that. They weren't telling him that. They weren't going to diagnose it. They fought the diagnosis when he got told he had this in 1996. They argued with the doctors.
And once they'd accept it, they'd claim that it was his genetics and not anything that happened to him.
It was even more complicated than that. They did not want to accept the verdict of this doctor and this immunologist in Memphis, Tennessee, So they said, the Memphis folks said, well, who would you believe then? And they said, the Army said, well, Johns Hopkins. So they send Colonel Smith off, they send him packing off to Johns Hopkins. And one of the world's leading rheumatologists at Johns Hopkins looks at his medical records and said, Colonel Smith, I must apologize to you for what has happened. It is abundantly clear that you have lupus, and you've had lupus for some time. And whoever has been treating you must have graduated at the bottom of his medical school class.
Oh, this is great.
And, you know, and it, of course, we're talking about Army doctors at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, who are running the Gulf War Illness Clinic.
Right, right, where of course, everybody's a malingerer and no one's
got a problem. Everyone's a malingerer. And guess who's the commandant of Walter Reed Army Medical Center?
Who?
His name was, at the time, was General Ronald Blank. And General Blank was the man who was in charge of biological warfare immunizations during the Gulf War.
Oh, man. Hold on a minute. Gary Matsumoto is our guest. Vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. This will explain Gulf War syndrome to you. Now, this would not be quite as frightening if this were all past tense, so it wouldn't be acceptable. But it's not past tense. This would also not be as frightening, perhaps, if this were contained to the military. Ah, but there's a dose with your name on it.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
How would you like to keep your existing phone number, your existing phone, and never have to talk to the phone company again? Well, if it sounds too good to be true, I want to tell you about VoIP Your Life. Now, VoIP service, Voice Over Internet Protocol, has been around for a few years now. Several companies provide it. Some of them are very vocal about telling you how great they are. And until last year, I thought none of them had good customer service. And take it from me, I tried most of them. Then I found VoIP Your Life, and I was stunned. We're talking about 24/7 tech support. Not that you'll probably need it, but if you do, people in the USA, knowledgeable, friendly, and helpful. If you need business support, they're there all day. They're in the United States of America, and they want to help you. No voicemail menus, none of that. So you got great customer service. Of course, that wouldn't be anything if you didn't have great technical ability. And boy, do you. It is crystal clear quality. Now, this is nothing like hooking a microphone up to your computer. You are using your own phone. You are using your own phone number. Whatever it is, you just pick it up, you hear the same dial tone, and you call anyone anywhere in the world. Now, you're probably saying, that must be a fortune. Hardly. Plans start at $14.97 for basic service. On up to the most expensive plan is $29.97 a month, and that gives you unlimited calling to 30 countries in the world. We're not just talking about the USA and Canada. We're talking about 30 countries. Features? Everyone you have now and a lot that you probably don't. Of course, you have caller ID and call waiting and voicemail. In fact, with voicemail, not only can you use your phone to access your voicemail, but if you want it delivered to your email account as well, it will be as convenient as it gets. Virtual phone numbers, boy, is that ever wonderful. If you've got friends or family in another town and you want them to be able to call you locally, get a virtual phone number. It works the same way your phone number does. They dial the same area code they're in and 7-digit phone number, and they're talking to you no matter where you are. You've got to check this out. If you go to Raleigh.net, R-O-L-L-Y-E.net, you'll get a link to VoIP Your Life. Or, of course, you can go direct to VoIPYourLife.com. If you want to give them a call, it's 888-369-VOIP, 888-369-VOIP. They are incredible. Check them out, VOIPYourLife.com. All right, Gary Matsumoto is joining us. Vaccine A is the book, the covert government experiment that's killing our troops, and I sure appreciate him for hanging on here because I wanted to build this purposely so that you would see what we're dealing with and how things go wrong, and we haven't fully gotten it there yet, but we do have a guy who wants wanted to be a general. That's right. Who, and you've just heard part of his story, is stonewalled. So now we'll find out what the government says when Johns Hopkins comes back and says, oh, yeah, it's lupus. All right. Now, he is in no way alone. This is case after case, and it is going on to this day. And, you know, it might be that, and it is, that enlisted folks and military folks cannot sue the government. But there comes a point when you're looking at responsibility when you think that an act of Congress was appropriate. So we'll see where that's at as well. I'll later put a link to Vaccine A and where you can order it on my website, Raleigh.net. But otherwise, go shopping. Vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers, by Gary Matsumoto, who will be right back right here on The Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show. Weird, wonderful, and worth it. The Raleigh James Show.
Round and round, same old thing. A heartache, misery, trouble, and pain.
Heartache, misery, trouble, and pain. That about sums it up, doesn't it? Vaccine A is the book. It is a must read. The covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers. And why GIs are only the first victims. Gary Matsumoto, a journalist who came across this and after doing the research knew it was a story that had to be told in book form, and it's one that you need to read. All right, so here we have a career guy who's gone to Johns Hopkins because the military says, well, if Johns Hopkins says it's lupus, we'll believe it.
Yeah, and that's when he got told by one of the world's leading rheumatologist, someone who specializes in this type of disease, in lupus, Dr. Michelle Petrie, says, Colonel Smith, you know, I'm sorry. She apologizes to him for the kind of care he got. Because she said, and it bears repeating, she said, I don't know who's been treating you, but he must have graduated at the bottom of his medical school class. That's how scathing she was. And right about this time, of course, Colonel Smith, along with legions of other military personnel who are now reporting sick, they're signing on to this registry with the government.
Right.
At the time, by the mid-90s, there are 100,000, just a shade under 100,000 troops, veterans of this war, who said they're sick and they believe their illnesses had something to do with their service in the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, out of the blue, the CIA and the Army reveal for the first time that they had blown up an Iraqi ammunition dump. And, you know, 5 years after the fact, they just realized that there were nerve agents in this dump.
The only problem with this, we could even cut to the chase, is we got soldiers who were sick who never went to the Gulf.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Well, they didn't blow up anything in Indiana.
No. They were injected here. Some of them got so sick with the identical problems that they could never they could not deploy.
Right, and some died.
Yeah.
And the one who was skinned to death is one of the most horrific.
Yeah, Scott Siefkin of Iowa, he was the very first Desert Storm veteran to die in that state. And he was diagnosed with lupus by the VA in, I believe it was Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
And for the life of me, I do not understand why they did this. You know, neither do I.
They removed every inch of skin on the guy's body.
Yes. What happened was this poor guy was developing these blisters all over his body, and they were about the size of silver dollars, and we're talking about from the top of his head down to his toes, and these blisters were very sensitive. If you just touch them, barely a touch, mm-hmm. his mother said they would burst open,
mm-hmm.
and they left these open weeping sores. Mm-hmm. over the majority of his body. And they sent him to a hospital, a university hospital this time, and they thought, well, you know, maybe what we need to do is remove all his skin.
Yeah, right there, that's about the time I'd say checking out.
Yeah. Now, again, we're talking about one of these tough guys who's told mm-hmm. initially, this is stress. It's all in your head, and you know, not the sort of person who'd ever want to complain about anything.
Right.
If you ask his wife, ask his mother, ask his sister. Scott was somebody who never complained about anything. Mm-hmm. Least of all his health. He was a healthy guy. Played football in Iowa. Loved being in the Army Reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, he has this terrible affliction. It started in his mouth. The sore started in the inside of his mouth. This man couldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, in order to solve this problem, they abraded his skin.
Right.
They literally scraped off every inch of this man's skin. He's lying there raw.
Right.
Bloody flesh. It was so terrible. His own children. His wife and his mother could not allow his children to see him.
Right.
Because they probably would have never recovered from the sight.
Exactly.
And Scott Siefkin never recovered from the procedure.
That's exactly right.
He died.
And it's horrific to even think about. But in case after case, we see people, maybe not quite that graphic, but dying or being compromised for life, and a government that continues to say, we didn't do anything to these people. And then comes, I guess, your encounter with the doctors in Memphis.
Yeah. There's a doctor, an immunologist, who's married to a rheumatologist in Memphis. She is an immunologist, a PhD immunologist. Went to one of the top molecular biology schools in the country. She comes up with this idea. She looks at some of these people, like Colonel Smith, and she said, this looks autoimmune to me.
Mm-hmm.
We should be doing clinical workups on these people for this. And without them knowing it, they were actually seeing some other lupus patients in their practice.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out they were Desert Storm veterans, men.
Interesting.
And she started saying, well, what sort of shots did you get?
Mm-hmm.
So she's starting to do this patient history
mm-hmm.
on these guys, and she's discovering that they were injected with something called Vaccine A. And she's thinking to herself, okay, why are you calling this Vaccine A if it isn't experimental?
Right.
What the heck is that? And she thought that what was happening to these guys was consistent with what happens in animals that are shot up with these oil accelerants.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went to Tulane University Medical School at the recommendation of an Army scientist, a colonel.
Mm-hmm.
In the reserves in Memphis, and he said, why don't you talk to this guy, Bob Gary, who happens to be one of the world's leading virologists. He's one of the top experts on the planet when it comes to the relationship between certain types of viruses and autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
Bob has got this way of testing for antibodies to an oil.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Asa goes, Bob, do you think you could do this? Now, there's no money for this, right? Everyone's doing this pro bono.
Right.
Bob goes, yeah, sure, let's try it. And they run, they start running tests on the serum of these guys, and the results are stunning. out of the sick Gulf War veterans that submitted their serum, 95% of them have antibodies to squalene.
Mm-hmm.
They then test healthy Desert Storm veterans, so the people who don't have any illness whatsoever, no complaints.
And none of them
have antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then they start testing military personnel who got sick but never left these shores.
Same ratio.
100% this time have the antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
And then they you know, just to be sure, they're checking all these other control groups. Now, mm-hmm. now, is this a marker for autoimmune disease in general? So they go mm-hmm. to, they test serum from lupus patients who they do not believe were injected with this accelerant.
And they all came out negative.
They're negative.
Right, because there's well-known things that point out lupus, like HLA-B27 and your ANA antibodies and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, you know about this, yeah.
Oh, unfortunately, firsthand.
Oh,
so,
okay.
With all that in mind, that's why when I was reading your book, I'm like, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Because to anybody who's got an autoimmune problem, this is just as obvious as plain, you know, as a nose on your face.
Mm. Yeah,
and
what they were saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at here. So, you know, I agree with the Johns Hopkins analysis that you have to be at the bottom of your class, or you have to not want to see this.
Yeah, and that's the hard part of the story to swallow.
Yeah, and so now, and you know, squalene as an oil accelerant has been known for a long time to be very problematic. And you'd think that whoever put forth the theory, you know, not squalene itself, like you say, that is a normal body component, so they figured okay. But the concept of oil accelerants, we know that that creates a problem.
Oh, you know, Scientists has been trying to get one of these oils to work since 1918.
Sure, because it's such a good deal on paper.
Mm.
You know, we'd all love for it to work.
Yeah.
So now we've got case after case of individuals, and of course, if that were the end of the story and the experiment was over, this would be just another dark day in American history, and maybe you wouldn't even written the book, but that's not the end of the story.
Sure. Well, you know, by now, you know, it's got to be even clearer to some of these military doctors that they got a big problem on their hands, and it is with this additive in their new vaccine. So what do you think they would do? They do it again, of course.
Right, right, but with different amounts for different people.
Different amounts for different people. In fact, in what amounts to a what they call a dose-ranging study, it's in various dilutions mm-hmm. that help you bracket the optimal dosage.
Right, to try and figure out there's some way to make it accelerate without it make it autoimmune.
Yeah.
And look.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, it's not like a poison, a conventional poison or something, other agent that could get you sick where the amount matters.
Mm-hmm.
In infinitesimally small quantities of this stuff can be a problem because all you need to do is trigger the immune response.
Right, right.
And the immune system, you know, they've learned, you know, these little carbon buckyballs, the artificial buckyballs, they've injected those into people and produced antibodies.
Oh, absolutely.
Give out anything.
Yeah, and to an extent, they know this in their heart of hearts because, in effect, it's what they're trying to do to create the vaccine, only they want it limited to anthrax.
Yeah.
But what they are realizing, I guess, in fairly short order is, no, it's not going to be that specific. It's an autoimmune cascade.
Yep, and once you trigger that response with a tiny amount, it's the immune system that does all the damage.
Right.
And that's the problem. All you need is to flip that trigger, and the jig's up.
That's right.
And that's what happened. The clinical evidence shows that military personnel injected between 1998 and 2000 during the military's mandatory anthrax vaccination program started developing the antibodies. And the military said, oh, no, we don't use this. We've never used this. It has never been an anthrax vaccine. It never will be. And they insisted that this was something like an X-file.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to be, you know, smoking something you shouldn't be smoking in order to come up with this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And they are adamant about this. The GAO looks into it. The GAO investigators say, hey, we're getting stonewalled here. The GAO, you know, these are pretty conservative guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't like to complain aloud about these sorts of things. I mean, you know, but they were saying, hey, this is stonewalling. This is obfuscation. Bottom line, we think they're hiding something. But we can't get to it because they just won't tell us anything.
Right. So now it's interesting because your investigation goes from what's happening to we know what's happening and how can we get them to cop to it.
Yeah. So, you know, I write this article saying that there are antibodies in these people developing who've been injected with anthrax vaccine. And again, the military is saying no way, no how.
Right. Gary's crazy. But in the meantime, I can only imagine the flurry of response you got.
Right. And what happened was, because this allegation was made publicly in a magazine like Vanity Fair, the FDA was compelled to test for it. And I had identified certain lots of vaccine that had induced or was at least associated with the induction of antibodies to the oil in sick military personnel. The FDA tested those lots, and it tested a few more lots. And it found it in every lot. But it didn't tell anybody.
Oh, that's nice.
That was real nice.
Yeah, so now we have the FDA who's realizing their premise is absolutely correct. But let's not tell a soul.
Yeah, for almost 2 years.
Right, because that was 99 when you wrote the Vanity Fair article.
Right. Now, you know what they're not telling people? They certainly didn't tell me, Raleigh. In 1998... the National Institutes of Health formed a secret working group. They just called it, rather benignly, the NIH Working Group. But its members are the FDA and the Department of Defense, and the whole point of this working group is to fast-track the licensing of the new vaccine.
And this is right around the time that they're not allowing any lawsuits against vaccination.
Right. They're also, at the time, forming... They forge an agreement with the governments of Canada and the United Kingdom to develop the same vaccine all together. So everyone's on board this train.
And what's fascinating is they already have enough evidence to realize that they got a major blunder on their hands.
Sick. The troops in Britain are sick.
Yeah, everywhere.
Troops in Canada. And the thing that was pointing to the vaccine that they never wanted to admit to was that only these troops were sick. Saudi troops, Egyptian troops, French troops, Dutch troops, they weren't sick. The only thing that Americans, British, the Brits, the Canadians, and the Australians had in common was anthrax vaccination.
Right. And again, whether they deployed or they didn't deploy did not matter. The only variable was did they get this vaccine or didn't they, regardless of the amount of squalene in it.
Right. So now we got three governments in on this. We have three federal agencies. All trying to do this. Why? Because of the threat of anthrax, that old national security threat.
But where we are, which is just so bizarre, is that we now have a substance that we know will, if not in all, in a majority of cases, impair people for life.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
You've probably heard that the government is going to be phasing out incandescent bulbs. They think they're not energy efficient, and they're not. And they're pushing those CFL bulbs on you, but CFL is fluorescent light. And I probably don't have to tell you how bad that is. So is there an alternative? Yeah, LED lighting. But in the past, people have said, you know, they're really great, they're bright, they're white, they're cool, they're wonderful, but they're just not powerful enough. Bob Crane took that to heart, worked on it for years. He has invented the Geo Bulb. The Geo Bulb is an LED light that will change the way you light your home and business. It will give you the effective lighting power of any 60-watt bulb, but it'll use less than 8 watts of power. That means you're going to save over 85% on the lighting portion of your power bill. That's more than 40% greater than what you save with the CFL bulbs, and you get great white usable light. 3 different shades, cool white or soft white or warm white, and what I like best about them is it's going to be a long time before you replace a bulb. An average use, probably a decade. But even if you were to burn one 12 hours hours a day, 7 days a week continually, it'd be over 8 years. So check them out. They're in the Sea Crane catalog. You can read all about LED lighting. It's also the backbone of their flashlights. CCRadio.com anytime. CCRadio.com. If you prefer to give them a call, they'd love to talk to you, and they'll send you out a catalog. That is 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863. T-U-N-E. It's the Sea Crane Company, and you tell them Raleigh sent you.
My little sleepy head learns about love and its lilt. You can bet that the change is more than from cotton to silk.
Yes, a dose of Frankie Avalon, not to prove there's something worse than the anthrax vaccine, but in fact to tell you that once again we're voting on the world's worst hit record, so we'll tell you more about that later. Of course, the balloting started on a night of horrors, Halloween, and will culminate as we play them back on a night of turkeys, Thanksgiving. So right now we're talking to Gary Matsumoto, Vaccine A. And as I say, the military's one thing, you're another. Now, a couple things. Firstly, didn't Congress supposedly take this anthrax vaccine just after the 9/11 anthrax scare?
Well, in theory.
And in reality?
Well, I think, let's say that I'm fairly certain that if congressmen took a shot, they got the license stuff.
Okay. Now, with this in mind, the next question is, of course, now, all right, let's give the government its due and say they need something against anthrax. But now they also have mounting evidence that they've got an absolute calamity on their hands. They've circled their wagons. They're not going to let anything out. Why are they continuing?
Well, for a couple of reasons. I think, first of all, we're talking about a monstrous degree of liability.
Yes.
Probably, at a minimum, tens of thousands of people harmed. Possibly in the hundreds of thousands.
Oh, I understand why you're sweeping it under the rug, why they are, but why not just quietly at least stop doing this?
Well, this, I can't come up with a good explanation for that other than sheer stubbornness, medical arrogance.
Yeah, arrogance.
And, you know, and I hate to say this because And one reason I hate to say this is because some of my colleagues have been working on this particular angle of the story, but you know, some of the scientists in the Army who were developing this vaccine accelerant, they had literally hundreds of thousands of their own dollars invested in companies making this accelerant.
Oh, God. Oh, God, as well as Congress who might have approved it if there was even this process.
Yeah.
And, oh, God.
Yeah, it wasn't just a matter that they were getting patents for this, and
they were getting stock options.
Yes, and what people may not recall all the details from President Eisenhower's farewell speech in 1961, where he coined the phrase military-industrial complex.
Oh, sure.
Well, what most people who have some dim recollection of that speech will probably not remember is that he was mostly talking about the danger of science being corrupted by large government and corporate contracts. Most of that speech had to do with his concerns about science.
Right.
And what we have today is a military pharmaceutical complex in which large pharmaceutical companies are forming these strategic partnerships with DOD, with FDA. The FDA, part of the FDA's fast tracking is, you know, Merck, you put up half the money, and we will cut the time of licensing in half.
That's absolutely true, and I can see just where this is going.
Yeah.
Now, believe it or not, I've got less than 30 seconds, and I hate to do that, because one of the things that I really want to get to is what individuals can do about this, because I think it needs to be a congressional investigation. Obviously, the people who have been harmed need to be compensated, but more to the point, we need to make sure that we are not in harm's way.
Once again, by popular request, David Adair, tomorrow night on The Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show.